welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Good morning. With me today is Frank Schirmeister, Senior Group Director, Solution Marketing at Cadence Design Systems. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into the matter at hand, Frank, can you tell us what brought you to semiconductors?
Yeah, I got a little bit of a detour, if you will. I financed my university time back in Germany with embedded software programming. Actually, I did do software for musical digital instruments, the MIDI interface for those of you old enough to remember it. I did a lot of software programming and then started in university being interested in microelectronics. So that was my major in university. And I ended up developing seven chips, led teams for seven chips back in Germany, mostly in the multimedia HDTV type realm of chip development. And in 98, I moved from Germany over here, which was 50% a job decision and 50% a personal decision, because my later wife was American, and I was her souvenir, if you will, from her German internship coming back home to Silicon Valley. And Silicon Valley for a German engineer was kind of like a dream come true. And that's how I got into microelectronics. I started with Cadence at the time, my software background, and then the chip development background uniquely helped me to work through system level design aspects. At the time, I was involved in the Felix project, the virtual component co-design aspects at the time. And then having lived in Silicon Valley or living in Silicon Valley, you can't really be here without having tried a startup, at least. So I've tried a couple in the low power and the embedded software world. And then for the last 10 years now, I'm back at Cadence again, dealing originally for the first 8-9 years with leading the hardware and software enablement technology, product management, which is emulation, prototyping, virtual prototyping. And for the last year now, I switched hats, if you will, and look at the technologies we at Cadence have through the lens of our customers' application needs. So thinking through what a customer actually will need from EDA technologies to build automotive designs, to build automotive, to build aerospace defense designs, and to build hyperscale data center chips and systems, right? So that's my, for the last 3 year, my core focus.
Yeah, and that's a good segue to the topic at hand. So let's talk about hyperscale computing and changes in the data center. So Frank, what are the challenges for computing going forward?
Well, it's computing, it's in the data center. If you look at it, it's really a combination of computing, memory, storage, and network, because those are really merging in the data center. And it's fascinating to see how the overall industry is transforming there, right? So if you look into data centers back in 2008, you had like 10 gigabit per second networks, and those have now grown to like hundreds of gigabytes per second. It's all merging together then with storage and memory, and you have this need to have workload specific compute in the data center. So the algorithms need to be optimized for specific tasks and for specific computing requirements, and that's what's really driving a lot of changes in the data center. And it's all coming, if you look at hyperscale computing in general in the hyperscale data center, it's really enabling this much bigger picture of the hyperconnectivity, if you will, all the way from all the sensors creating data, these being transmitted through networks, processed on the way with edge processing, and then you have various types of data centers in various positions with various latencies from the original data creation. So it's a very, very complex aspect of hyperconnectivity, getting you all this data into hyperscale data centers and then creating really interesting actionable insights on it. Some of them may be scary for end consumers, and I'm not always happy when I see that my last email conversation changes the ads I receive on my next web browsing. So those type of insights are sometimes something people wonder about, but a lot of it is really positive, right? So the health insights, being able to predict based on my calorie intake and so forth, what's happening? Am I at the right level of health investment with my workouts and so forth? And then actionable insight to predict real life interesting things like whether my car needs to go to maintenance and so forth. Those are all very, very, very interesting and useful life improving aspects that this whole hyperscale computing and the workload specific hyperscale computing brings us.
Yeah, you know, for me, this is full circle, because when I did my undergraduate, I did computer architecture stuff, and there were data centers back then. You know, they were called mainframes. And then I spent much of my career bringing computing to the desktop, then the laptop, and now, you know, you have supercomputers in your pockets. But the data center is now, you know, full circle, the focus of computing now, you know, the cloud and everything. So let me ask you a little bit more detailed question. How does the Hennessy-Patterson golden age fit in here?
Oh, I mean, that's the perfect example. When they presented this in their Turing lecture in 2018, I believe it was, it really brought together this notion of computing becoming much more domain specific, and you have all these domain specific engines, the domain specific languages. So the ability in the future to be able to customize the design really to your application's need is what's driving this golden age, as Hennessy and Patterson called it in their Turing lecture. Which is fascinating here is that this extends at various levels. So it extends in the chip level scope. So you have these systems on chips, or these are increasingly now getting disaggregated, becoming systems on substrate and so forth with 3DIC technologies. You have the same level of convergence and configuration happening at the system level as well. When you look at how those four pillars, and that's not my term, I think I took this from a keynote that Facebook gave at one of our Cadence Live events. They were talking about how computing, memory, storage, and networking, how those really converge and how they are different needs depending on the application's latency, performance, low power, and processing requirements. So this locality of data that needs to be very close to the computing, with the need to really get very short latencies and enable the compute as well as possible. Those are fascinating changes, like you said, full circle for you from a computer architecture perspective, how the data center changes at those various levels, the chip level, the entity design level, the system level, how it all is in the rack, how it's connected. And then that extends, if you will, to the system architecture of the hyper-connected system, from sensors through networks through edges where processing happens, because you have to be very careful where the processing actually is happening, because you want the data available, the locality of the data is very critical, the latency is very critical, how fast do I actually get my actionable insight back to do something, and depending on the application domain, the vertical you're in, those may be vastly different, right? My The response to me requesting something from a multimedia site is a very different requirement than what a gamer needs for the game to react fast, and what a car would need to adjust traffic directions, or in an industrial system, the industrial Internet of Things, the latency you would need to compute how a robot reacts, right? So those are vastly different requirements at the system level, all of which need to be addressed with the compute, memory, storage, and networking architecture at the various levels of scope.
Yeah, you know, as I mentioned, Frank, I have grandchildren. I'm just wondering what my grandchildren's life are going to be with all this technology surrounding them. I mean, I'm guessing my grandchildren won't even need to learn how to drive cars. I mean, the changes we're going to see in the next 10 to 20 years is just incredible. So let's go back to the data center. So what's going on in the data center as a result of all this?
Well, so I've hinted at this earlier a little bit. You have these convergence of those four areas, computing, memory, storage, and networking going on. And that's what's going on in the data center and at the various levels of scope around it as well. The biggest item I would put on top of those changes is going forward and over the last decades, really, is the programmability on top of it, right? So you had, if you look back 15 years ago, 2008 or so, you had virtual machines. Today you talk into containers on top of those virtualized entities that we access in the data center. You have software-defined networking, which started somewhere in the like early 2012, 2013. To be predominant, you have at one point you added software-defined storage on top of it, and now we are finding in this context of programmability and virtualization, software-defined security. So it's all programmable. The data center essentially becomes programmable as well. And in that context, then going back to the discussion we had earlier about Hennessy Patterson's Golden Age Turing lecture, this whole ability now to create new designs and new chips in the data center, which allows you to now have specific AI acceleration, you have specific compute, the data processing units, and so forth. Those are fascinating architecture changes where you have very specific customized compute engines going on. And that's why on the silicon side, to enable this programmability in software I mentioned earlier, you have all these configurable engines now, right? So configurable compute for vision, for audio, the configurable processors, which we EDA vendors provide, for example, fit into that perfectly, because you now can have much more dedicated, much more customized domain-specific compute enabled both in hardware and software. And then what's fascinating on top of it, again, hinting back to Hennessy Patterson here, then how do you program that, right? The domain-specific languages, how do you actually do programming of this parallel world, and how do you program the data center, if you will, to the needs of the applications you're running on it and the balance of type of applications you're running on it throughout a day is very fascinating as a change. So it's really a lot of flexibility compared to what we just had a decade ago.
Yeah, you know, we all drive cars, and I guess if you have an old, you know, classic car, you can see real clearly, you know, the technological advances we've made in automotive. But it's something a lot of people don't notice because it's incremental, and we drive cars every year. But you know, I grew up sailing and flying airplanes, and I just got back into that. And I tell you, it's amazing at the technology that is embedded in these boats and airplanes. You know, you don't see paper maps anymore. You know, we use iPads and Bluetooth, and it's just amazing. But you know, there are some challenges there, and bringing this technology to, you know, automotive and boats and planes. So What are the hot topics right now?
Yeah, so the hot topics, if you look into the data center, if you keep it there first, you have these, I think the three from a semiconductor perspective, most predominant challenges you see are really the 3D IC enablement for silicon. So the ability to change designs without having to re-spin a chip. And that's driven by a couple of needs to have essentially the ability to go beyond the reticle limit, because some of those data center chips are so complex and so big at this point. If you look at the latest AMDs and designs and so forth that were announced, Intel, it's fascinating how the memory, the compute, the dedicated accelerators, how they are all more and more now integrated at the 3D IC level. And that has a slew of new changes going on here in terms of having to deal with a system analysis around the thermal effect, the electromagnetic effects, and then having the ability to spin those designs fast. Is very important, driven by the reticle limit for one, but then also by the need to have these domain-specific variations done fast without having to restart your design and rebuild a SoC. So that's number one, 3D IC. The second one I would outline is low power. If you look at the vast scale in all of this, in the hyperscale data center itself, the vast scale of designs. I mean, if you look at the recent surveys and recent analysis, Synergy Research published earlier this year in January that more than 100 new hyperscale data center facilities were built just in 2020, taking the total number to almost 600. And that's just amazing. Look at the power consumption these will add. And that's just in the data center. Low power is then a key driver for the decision where in this whole hyperconnected network, from the sensors through the devices, the network itself, the edges at which processing happens, and the data center. It's a key aspect. Where do you actually do the compute, right? Do I send my data to the data center and compute it there and wait until the results come back? Or do I spend more compute power at an edge to do the edge processing much earlier in the cycle to get lower latency? So those are very high system level aspect questions to be answered, and low power together with a balance of performance and the compute availability, the computing cycle availability plays a key role there. So that's number two, the low power aspect. And number three, I would point out is just the ability to enable these new levels of compute, to enable the computational software algorithms for AI, ML processing. Is in itself a key challenge where some of the EDA algorithms really need to, and the EDA capabilities need to follow suit in every domain, from dealing with very hierarchical design. So that goes all the way into the layout and implementation aspect that you need the right capabilities for to manage the hierarchy, all the way to just the sheer complexity of verifying these designs. So you need very, very capable emulation prototyping to be able to deal with the capacity of those designs. And then in the world of verification, validation, you need the right memory models, you need the right interfaces to the network, and not to forget, you need the right ability to enable the hardware software convergence and do all this before you actually tape out the chip and commit to the mask sets and all that. So those items are really, I would say, the top three challenges there: 3D IC, low power, and AI ML enablement. And again, at various levels of scope, the chip itself, then that extends to the data center topology, programmability in the data center, and that extends to the hyper-connected world we are approaching, where everything is connected and available at every time, and where you need to make those architecture decisions where you do compute, where you do the processing of data, depending on which latencies you need and how much power you can spend at various levels in the network.
Yeah, that reminds me of one of the first keynotes I saw in my career is an electronics conference, and the keynotes were Andy Grove of Intel and Bill Gates of Microsoft. And Andy Grove got up and said, "Computer hardware will never ever be the limiting factor. It will always be software." And then Bill Gates got up right after him and said, "Computer software will never ever be the limiting factor of computing. It will always be hardware." And they're both true. But now we have the power in the data centers to really explore AI and ML. And that's another conversation. We barely scratched the surface. I think that's one of the probably the most interesting and hot topics right
Oh,
now is.
fully agreed, fully agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about the supply chain. How does this impact the overall supply chain?
Well, this is a fascinating bit for us as an EDA vendor or a computational software vendor. If you look at just 10 years back, 20 years back, when we both were in the sandbox and started our careers, EDA was so simple, if you will, right? So you just design chips, you have EDA, you do push some polygons around, implement it, and it all works, right? At this point, this has really extended complexity-wise into an industry. If you look at the rough numbers, you're looking at EDA somewhere $10 billion market to enable a about $500 billion semiconductor market, enabling about 2.5 trillion order of magnitude of electronics, of OEM electronics across those vertical domains like consumer, hyperscale computing, mobile networking, aerospace defense, automotive, industrial, and health. Those happen to be the eight we are focusing on at Cadence as industry verticals. So you have these market dynamics, and EDA itself is growing up to really interact much more with the system aspects of the design. So that's why what we do in my world, we call it intelligent system design. So suddenly I meet and learn a lot of new things with dealing with the electromechanics, with the fluidics aspects of designs, because they are all interconnected. If I have more power usage because my software is running wild, I need to model the thermal aspects of all that. I need to model the electromagnetic aspects. I need to figure out at the system level, at the rack and the board level, from a fluidics perspective, can I get all the heat away, right? And then extend that into how the mechanical world, the systems world interacts with respect to the fluidics of a car or the fluidics of a plane, together with the rest of the electronics aspect. So EDA is growing into this much and building connections into the system analysis market, system simulation market. So if you look at some of the analysts, they call it the PLM market. So that's about a 50 to 60 billion domain market from an EDA perspective. So the supply chain as a vendor, we see this merging of those different domains, electrical, mechanical, fluidics, and having to deal with all of this more coherently. And that's where you see the most recent acquisitions we have done fit in, and the most recent announcements throughout the last year with system tools like Clarity for electromagnetic analysis, and then the Celsius for the thermal analysis, extending what we already had with Sigrity. So that's at the enablement side. But then even more fascinating, what's going on in the data center, I think I would liken it to what happened to the mobile industry probably 10, 15 years ago, when suddenly somebody decided, oh, I do all my chips myself, right? So looking at the how the design chain, the supply chain changed over time in the mobile world, the same is happening here now as well. And that's why you suddenly have people like Facebook, people like AWS being keynoters at EDA industry events, at like our Cadence Live events, and talking about how they do their own chips, right, and how they do EDA. So it's a very fascinating environment, and one item that fits in there very well is the Open Compute Project, right? So you have always had the dynamic where the system house drives requirements down into supply chain. But if you look at what Facebook has done, and this is all public knowledge, of course, with the Open Compute Project, by basically bringing together the industry from the hyperscalers like themselves, like the Google, driving requirements, how you build the systems. And then you look at the Open Compute Project, and you find now north of 230 companies there, hyperscalers, data center providers, semiconductors, IP providers, we are in it as well. And the system providers, OEMs who provide the systems into the hyperscale data center. So you find this changing dynamic of which chips do I do myself as a system house versus where do I take the silicon or influence the supply chain myself as a system house, as a Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and so forth, the classic hyperscalers there. So that's really changing the industry quite fundamentally, just like 10, 15 years ago it happened in the mobile industry. I mean, do you remember how in the old days of us doing our mobile phones? Remember things like Symbian? You had a completely disaggregated design chain where the semiconductor guy would buy an OS and provide data, and then the system house, the Nokia and Ericsson phones, they would integrate it all into your system. So that all has changed fundamentally, and we're part of the same shift, I would say, in the hyperscale data center, where they take on a lot of the key differentiation for those, what we talked about earlier, specific workloads, where they do a lot of that themselves.
We're at a stopping point. Thank you, Frank, for spending time with us.
Thanks for having me.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.